The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
High drive, center field, hit the wall, grand slam.
This is magnificent.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Frank, Scott, Chris, and Adam.
What is up, everybody, and welcome into Fantasy Baseball Today on Thursday, June 3rd. I am Frank Stanfield, joined by Chris Towers with a loaded show for you today. Chris's Week 10 trade chart is out, so I made a bunch of would-you-rathers for similarly ranked players that we will talk about. Some interesting pitching performances from Wednesday. Mets hitters slowly but surely coming back to life. We'll answer some of your email questions. And speaking of questions, I have a burning question for Chris that I will save for the end of the podcast. It has absolutely nothing to do with
I know what
baseball.
The question is, and the answer is it's Larry Johnson's fault.
No, Chris, it has nothing to do with what I was going to ask you.
Sure, it doesn't.
How's life, Chris? You are a busy man, as always, but you're balancing football and baseball right now. This is a busy time for you.
Yeah. It's still kind of quiet in the football world. We got another like month and a half that I can sneak in some vacation time.
That's good. I like to hear that. Let's have baseball dominate your life for at least another month here, Chris.
Well, like I said, I'm gonna take a little vacation. I got my niece coming into town the week after next. So, you know, taking the whole week off. But, you know, It's all right, man. Football's easy. You got to know like 12 players. You know?
I feel like that's not true, but let's talk about some baseball.
Oh, you got to know about half as many.
Goodness gracious.
All right. So let's take a look at some of Wednesday's biggest standouts here. Chris, where would you like to start?
Let's start with Framber Valdez, who had an exceptional start against Boston in his second start back from the IL. He had 10 strikeouts in 7 innings. I believe he allowed 1 earned run on 5 hits, 2 walks. Pretty good. Pretty good start for Framber Valdez. Not someone that, you know, even last season necessarily we expected big strikeout numbers from, but you know, through his first 2 starts, now he's got 14 through 11 innings. That's pretty good.
Yeah, it was a fantastic showing from Framber Valdez, and I was surprised to see that they let him go this deep in only his second start, where in the first one, he threw around 70, 75 pitches. This one, they just let him go against the Boston Red Sox, too. 7 innings, 1 run, 10 strikeouts, 18 swinging strikes on 102 pitches. 9 of those came on his curveball, which is his best pitch. He has a 78% ground ball rate through 2 starts, and that's what makes Framber Valdez so enticing, is the fact that he can average around a strikeout per inning. He has a really, really good ground ball rate. And if the control does not get out of whack, you know, he can be, I think, somewhere between like 2.5 and 3 walks per 9. I think if he does that, he's going to be really, really serviceable for fantasy purposes, which we saw exactly last year. So the next question here, Chris, is how far is Valdez moving up your rankings? Because before he got hurt, he was inside, I think, Scott and my top 30 starting pitchers. I don't know if your rankings were available yet, but we were very bullish on him. And I think after this start, he's kind of has to push back towards that level.
I don't think I would put him that high, but you know, in just eyeballing it, I think 35 makes sense. So right, I'm updating as we speak because there were a couple things that I needed to change there as well. But right between Shohei Ohtani and Max Fried, I think Max Fried is actually a pretty reasonable comp for him. They're both guys who you expect to have really good results on balls in play. Not elite strikeout pitchers, but should be good enough. Yeah, I think that's where I land with Valdez.
That is, I think, a really good comp. I think Max Fried versus Framber Valdez. Valdez is going to be more efficient. You're welcome, Chris. He's going to be more efficient, and he's going to go deeper into his starts just because that's what he did last year, and Dusty Baker seems to let his pitchers do that. Sometimes Max Fried is not the most efficient starting pitcher. I think I'm going to move him. Well, I can move him ahead of Blake Snell and Castillo and Dylan Bundy. No problem there. Move him ahead of Steven Strasburg, who's back on the IL. We'll talk about that. I think right around the Kyle Hendricks, Sonny Gray range, like 31 through 33, that's probably where I'm going to settle here for Framber Valdez. I think that's a good spot for him. And we actually received a question on Twitter right before we started. It came from Roger Williams. And he said, would you rather Framber Valdez or Ian Anderson rest of season? I know you're a big Ian Anderson fan, Chris. Ian Anderson on the season, 3.27 ERA, 1.25 whip, over a strikeout per inning, 9.7 K per nine. Chris, who would you rather have, Framber Valdez or Ian Anderson?
Yeah, I haven't really seen any reason to have moved Ian Anderson below Framber Valdez, which, you know, I had Anderson quite a bit higher than him coming into the season. So I'll stick with that. You know, Anderson started off, you know, he's not going to be someone who goes super deep into games at this point in his career, but, you know, he did go three straight with at least six innings before his most recent start. So, you know, I think he's about average, maybe a little above in terms of how deep you can expect him to throw. And I just think he's really good. I think he's a better pitcher than Valdez, but, you know, it's a promising start so far. The one thing with Valdez, he's gotten hit pretty hard early on, which is a little uncharacteristic. He had, let's see, six batted balls, hit over 95 miles per hour on, I'm trying to do some quick math in my head, that's 21, 11. Yeah, so he had about a 40% hard hit rate tonight. This is something to keep an eye on. He has not allowed a fly ball yet, according to Baseball Savant's definition of a fly ball. He's, you know, last season it was 9.4% fly ball rate. He does give up generally a lot of line drives, I guess, but, you know, he's pretty good. I don't think there's a path for him to be like a super ace, but I think Framber Valdez is quite good.
Chris, it doesn't matter how hard you're allowing contact when it's all into the ground. That's why we have analytics departments, baby. We have those shifts set up.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's given a, I think it's a 70% pull rate as well so far this season. So,
yeah,
you know, with numbers like that, you can kind of see why he's had some pretty good results so far.
Yep, I will take Ian Anderson as well ahead of Framber Valdez. I do think the control is a little bit worse for Ian Anderson. He has quality starts in five of his last seven starts, Ian Anderson does, and I just trust his arsenal a little bit more. Framber Valdez, very reliant, sinker, curveball, changeup, not really a pitch he uses all that much. I think Ian Anderson's three-pitch mix is a little bit better, so it's close, but I will take Ian Anderson myself as well. For me, oh my goodness gracious, the mountain, or maybe he's not a mountain after all. Alek Manoah up against
maybe you're making a mountain out of a molehill.
That's right. I wish I had like a ba-dum-tsh sound effect, but I don't. Do I have something that can? No, nothing good enough there. But for Alek Manoah going up against your Marlins, rocking the Marlins jersey, Chris, 3 1/3, 4 hits, 4 earned runs, 3 walks. 5 strikeouts. He got hit hard. He allowed a 96 mile per hour average exit velocity against on Wednesday. He gave up 3 home runs. One of them came against the Jazz Man.
Man, that was Jazz has some home runs this season that just like almost don't make sense. Like,
I think he's got
the two.
I think he's going to be a star. I think he's going to be a star.
Yeah, he's giving me some like Javi Baez vibes. He's got the 2 home runs that were like at eye level. One of them, 101 mile per hour fastball off Jacob DeGrom. Today's was like a slider off the outside corner.
It was actually a changeup. It was a changeup.
Oh, changeup. Okay, that he poked over the left field fence the opposite way. He's an interesting hitter.
Yeah, But back to Manoa. What did you see in this start, Chris? I did notice that the three home runs he allowed all came off of his secondary pitches. Two of them came off the changeup. One came off the slider. And I was watching that start, and he got hit in the leg with a comebacker in the same inning that he allowed all of his home runs. So I don't know if that actually affected him. I'm not making excuses for the guy, but maybe it did. It was just something I noticed.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, one, he got hit pretty hard. You know, 96 mile per hour average exit velocity overall. Six hard hit balls and only three and a third innings. And it was pretty much on all of his heart, on all of his pitches. The slider, he only, his average exit velocity was 87 on three balls in play, but everything else, it was a lot of loud contact that Alek Manoah gave up today. That's not necessarily, you know, that is the kind of thing that fluctuates a lot from start to start, and it's not necessarily worrisome because it wasn't necessarily an issue in his first start. The strikeouts and swing strike rates have been very good. But one thing I did notice, he's throwing a lot of sliders right in the heart of the zone. If you look at his Baseball Savant page, they've got like a heat map for every pitch. And the slider, it's basically a little bit on that like outside corner to right-handed hitters and then right in the middle of the strike zone. Now, that could be because if you look at his fastball, he's also throwing most of his fastballs in the upper left corner. So inside, up and into right-handed hitters. If you're doing that consistently, the, you know, middle to middle in slider isn't necessarily going to hurt you as bad. But, you know, that there could be some location issues that he's dealing with early on that could lead to, you know, this kind of performance. But it's still two starts. The stuff still looks really good. I think there's still a lot to be excited about here.
We're holding on to Alek Manoah, right, Chris?
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, 90% rostered, so keep him on your team. I know it's not what we expected. We thought it was a really good matchup against the Marlins, but we got to remember he still is a rookie, and these things are going to happen.
Was his velocity down today?
I did not check the... I have it up right here.
Yeah, he averaged 93.2 with the four-seamer last start. It was...
I think it was 94.9,
yeah. So yeah. That is a little low.
I wonder if that comeback hitting him affected him at all. I'll have to read about it and I'll get back to everybody. But yeah, he seemed to just shake it off really quickly, but maybe it was something. Definitely worth monitoring that fastball velocity for Alek Manoah. I was actually on the In This League podcast earlier on Wednesday with our buddy, the Welsh, and he had a player debate Alek Manoah versus Tarek Skubal. And I said Alek Manoah, but No, I'm still going to stick with Alek Manoah, but who would you rather have, Chris, Manoah or Skubal?
I think there's a little bit of recency bias there. You know, I would say this, if Tarek Skubal had never gotten called up and he was just getting called up this week, we'd probably be just as excited about him as we are about Alek Manoah. And
yeah,
Skubal's got a really deep repertoire. He throws a lot of pitches. He's got really good stuff. And lately, especially, he's been starting to string together some really impressive starts. I like him more than Casey Mize at this point, for sure, his teammate, who's had better results so far this season. And I don't know. I think that's really close. I wouldn't drop either for the other, but I would like both on my team. So that is my dodge.
Yes, I agree with you. I would take Skubal over Casey Mize as well. I will rank the Manoah, Skubal, Mize, but it is very close. An honorable mention to the Dodgers for the, oh my goodness gracious, players of the night, as they had an 11-run first inning against Carlos Martinez and the St. Louis Cardinals. The final line for Carlos Martinez, he recorded 2 outs, 6 hits, 10 runs, 4 walks. So, oh my God. Sorry there, Carlos Martinez.
That is a tidy 134.93 ERA for the start.
Cody Bellinger had 6 of those in the first inning, which included a grand slam and a 2-run single. So a welcome sight for Cody Bellinger, who is working his way back. Hey, FBT listeners, you have probably seen it all over social media this week as Floyd Money Mayweather will be fighting viral star Logan Paul this Sunday on Showtime. And there is only one place to get all your coverage for this carnival boxing match. The Morning Combat podcast. Brian Campbell and Luke Thomas will be on site in Miami all week to provide provide you with everything you need leading up to the fight. Follow Morning Combat wherever you listen to podcasts to get all the preview content you need for this crazy event. News and notes from Wednesday. Steven Strasburg was placed on the IL with a neck strain, which is what we will go with. His velocity was down below 90 miles per hour in his most recent start. And we're only a 1/3 into the season. I realize that, but Strasburg has now been placed on the IL twice. I'm kind of getting the feeling that this might be a lost season for him, which I realize is a little bit premature, but I don't have a good feeling about Steven Strasburg. How could you at this point? Madison Bumgarner was removed from Wednesday's start after two innings due to left shoulder discomfort and will undergo an MRI. Mitch Garver was placed on the 10-day IL after undergoing groin surgery on Tuesday night. Ryan Jeffers rejoined the Twins, and he does have some prospect pedigree. He homered Wednesday in his first game back against the Orioles, 4% rostered for those of you in two catcher leagues. I would imagine Jeffers gets most of the playing time as the Twins catcher moving forward. Fernando Tatis could rejoin the Padres lineup on Thursday. He left earlier in the week with oblique discomfort. Yordan Alvarez has been asking to play left field for quite some time, apparently, and he earned his first start there on Wednesday. And one of the main reasons, actually, that I read was because Framber Valdez was on the mound and the fact that he is a ground ball pitcher and that they just didn't expect many balls to get into the outfield in this start. Here was a quote from manager Dusty Baker on Alvarez playing in the outfield. Quote, early in the year, I didn't want to take a chance because they told me whenever he would play in the outfield before, he would be sore prior to his operation. He's been working hard, getting his legs strong. He's in outstanding shape, and he's running good. A lot of it is mental. Once you get past that part of it, it makes it a lot easier to feel comfortable with changing of direction and stuff. So I don't know if this is going to be a regular occurrence for Yordan Alvarez, but we're four starts away on CBS, at least, Chris, from him earning outfield eligibility. If Yordan Alvarez did earn that, where would you place him in your outfield ranks? My early return is probably right around Aaron Judge, outfielder 12, I think, right behind Tucker and Judge. I think that makes sense.
That's the range I was thinking, because I've got Castellanos at 12, Yelich at 13, Trout at 14, Teoscar at 15. I think I'd slide him right in behind Castellanos. You could maybe make an argument for ahead of Castellanos, but
no, whoa.
Castellanos has obviously been amazing, so I won't make that argument, even though I think he's playing over his head right now, but that's fine. I think 13, yeah.
All right, well, let's make it happen, Yordan Alvarez. Justin Dunn was placed on the IL with right shoulder inflammation. Kyle Schwarber left Wednesday's game with an apparent knee injury. Ref Snyder was placed on the 7-day concussion IL. AJ Pollock is slated to return for the Dodgers on Friday. JT Brubaker is not starting this week for personal reasons. I saw he was placed on the bereavement list last weekend. Ha-Seong Kim and Tommy Pham were both pulled after colliding with each other. It was a pretty nasty scene in that game against the Cubs earlier on Wednesday. Jonathan Villar left Wednesday's game with hamstring tightness. Kenta Maeda completed a long toss session on Tuesday and could throw a bullpen session this weekend. Michael Pineda experienced some discomfort in his right forearm during his start on Tuesday, and maybe that explains why he was pretty ineffective against the Baltimore Orioles. Some prospect updates. Wander Franco had a four-hit game on Tuesday. Chris, at this point, just a guess. I'm not going to hold you to it. When do you think we see Wander Franco with the Tampa Bay Rays?
I think Jeff Zimmerman had some data on this. He had all the Super 2 data, and he said that, like, the latest the Super 2 deadline has been in any of the last, I think, 10 years or maybe longer was like June 10th. So I wouldn't say before then.
Do you think we see Wander Franco or Vidal Brujan first?
My guess is Brujan.
Yep.
Just because he's already on the 40-man roster. And so procedurally, it's easier to call him up. But why not both? And Brujan has been playing outfield, I believe. So
yes, all three out.
There may be some flexibility there, although Franco, in theory, could also play presumably any of the infield positions. And I think he has played second and third this season as well for the first time.
I think they want to make sure Vidal Brujan's confident in center field as a defender before they do something like this. Although I guess they could throw him in right field and they could have Manuel Margot play center and Arozarena and Meadows, one of those guys could play left and DH. And once Wander Franco comes up, I would assume that's the end of playing time for Taylor Walls, but they just called him up. So they have some finagling. Yeah, I mean,
my initial thought when they called Taylor Walls up, because he's 24 years old, he does have some prospect pedigree, but he's not a high prospect, was let's give him 3 to 4 weeks, see if there's anything there. If he sparks, great. We can keep him in the lineup. If not, you know, he's probably a future utility infielder anyway.
Taylor Walls is currently batting .222 with a .679 OPS. So we shall see. Rangers third base prospect Josh Jung is recovering from a foot injury and has been running the bases. He's about 10 to 14 days from joining an affiliate, a name to remember, obviously, in keeper and dynasty leagues. And Pirates pitching prospect. This is not the first time I brought up his name, but Roansy Contreras, 6 shutout with 8 strikeouts in his most recent start at AA. He has a 1.63 ERA through, I wrote 3 starts, but I feel like he has more than 3 starts. He has a 1.63 ERA in AA at this point. He came over from the Yankees in the Jameson Taillon trade. The Pirates are probably going to be very patient with him, I would imagine. But again, keeper dynasty leagues, make sure you have that guy on your radar. Roansy Contreras. Would you rather? Let's pit a bunch of players up against each other. And the first one, Francisco Lindor or Marcus Semien. Are we at this point yet? Let's talk about it. Francisco Lindor went 3 for 5 on Wednesday, including a bunt single, which I've got to say, I love. I love the fact that Lindor is getting paid all this money. He's viewed as a superstar. He is a superstar. I shouldn't say viewed. And he gets a bunt single. Like, why don't more players do that? Anyway, he now has 8 hits over his last 4 games. I think you said it was 9 over his last 5 as well. Lindor is batting .209 currently with 4 home runs and 4 steals. He is the number 364 player in Roto. Marcus Semien is much better than that. He is batting .301, 13 homers, 8 steals, 38 runs, 32 RBI. He is the 10th best player in Roto, the 2nd best shortstop in head-to-head points. Chris, are we at that point yet? Would you rather Lindor or Semien?
Not even close for me. Still Lindor.
I didn't know which way you were going to go for a second.
No, I mean, Semien's been awesome, but really he's been awesome in May. He was pretty crappy in April. He had a .658 OPS at the end of the month. He did have 5 homers and 7 stolen bases, so he was still a pretty useful fantasy option, especially in roto leagues. But, you know, you look at his overall numbers and they kind of look like 2019. And so maybe it's like, well, maybe 2020 was the outlier. He's striking out almost twice as often as he did in 2019. I don't know. I think he's solid, especially in that lineup. Like, there's going to be a ton of counting stats in that lineup. I think he's going to be, you know, a 2020 guy. I would still rather have Lindor. I think Lindor is the better player. If somebody offered me Francisco Lindor for my Marcus Semien right now, I would trip over myself to take that trade.
Okay. I'm not as confident. I would still take Francisco Lindor, but Semien has closed the gap quite a bit, and Lindor has done the same by playing the way he has played so far this season. And it's not like there's anything in the underlying numbers that say Lindor is going to get better, but I think you just hang your hat on track record and that Lindor has been an elite player for as long as he is. Chris, what if I made this Lindor versus Javier Baez, specifically in Roto? Javier Baez went 1 for 4 on Wednesday with his 14th home run. He's batting .255. He also has 8 steals. Baez or Lindor in Roto?
That's a much tougher one. I'm looking at my trade values chart now. My guess would be that I still have Lindor higher in Roto, and I do. So yeah, still Lindor, but that would be tougher to do.
The next one that I have here, Adbert Alzolay or Yusei Kikuchi. Alzolay, another fine start against the Padres on Wednesday. 5 innings, 1 run, 1 walk, 7 strikeouts. He has allowed 3 earned runs or less in 9 straight starts. I don't know that people realize Alzolay has been this good. His ERA is down to 3.62. His whip, 0.91. That is a phenomenal number for a guy that has had as many control issues as he has in the past. Adbert Alzolay is 71% rostered. Yusei Kikuchi, his last 6 starts have just been phenomenal. 2.77 ERA, 0.85 whip with a 56% ground ball rate. Chris, would you rather Alzolay or Kikuchi?
I would rather Kikuchi. One thing I was looking up, and this is just for my own edification, Alzolay has a 381 ERA, or had a 381 ERA coming into this start. That was a 101 ERA plus. That is wild. That means an a league average ERA right now is right around 3.8, given park factors in Colorado. Or
usually Chicago, that's over, like well over four, right?
Usually it's around there. So that it's just still the landscape we're in, even with offense up in May. I would still rather have Kikuchi just because there does seem to be kind of a pretty hard limit on how much Alzolay is going to pitch in any given game, no matter how well he's pitching. He's averaging under 5.5 innings per start. And there have not been a ton of opportunities for him to go deeper than that. Whereas Kikuchi, he hasn't been quite as good overall, but he's averaging 6 innings per start. So I think that's enough to shift the balance in his favor. I could see Alzolay being a little better on a per inning basis, though.
You say Kikuchi has thrown 6-plus innings in 9 of 10 starts this season. He has thrown 6-plus in 6 straight. All of those have been quality starts. Kikuchi is awesome right now. Both of these pitchers are awesome, but I would take Yusei Kikuchi over Adbert Alzolay.
And one thing I do want to check.
You know, someone asked me today, Chris, would I drop Luis Castillo for Adbert Alzolay? And I hesitated for a second.
I couldn't. I understand it, but I couldn't do it.
I agree with you.
I think one thing that really does help Kikuchi in this area is they are sticking with that 6-man rotation. He hasn't pitched on less than 5 days rest at all this season, which makes it a little easier to go deep into games. You know, no DH in the AL especially also helps. I think that's going to be a consistent edge for him over someone like Alzolay.
All right, the next one up here is Adolis Garcia or Starling Marte, which before the season, if I said this, you would say who?
I mean, had you ever heard of Adolis Garcia?
Adolis Garcia, who is this guy? In Roto, entering Wednesday, Adolis Garcia was the 13th best player in fantasy baseball in Roto leagues. In 5x5, the traditional 5x5 with batting average, Adolis Garcia was the 13th best player. He went 1-for-4 with his 7th steal of the season. He also has 16 home runs. Starling Marte recently returned from the IL. He went 1-for-3 on Wednesday with his 3rd home run. It was his first home run since returning from the IL. This is kind of the steady veteran versus the mystery bag upside of Adolis Garcia. Which one would you rather have, Chris?
Yeah, I think that's probably underselling Starling Marte a little bit. If you gave him the same amount of plate appearances as Adolis Garcia, he would be hitting 324 with 7 home runs and 7 home runs and 9 stolen bases. Looks like it'd be about 38 runs scored and 22 RBI. So I think it's still Starling Marte. I think he's... Did I move him into my top 10 at outfield? If I didn't, it's close. Yeah, I didn't move him up quite that much, but I do need to. And he was a top 20-ish outfielder for me coming into the season, Starling Marte. You know, you're still going to probably get something like a 20 steal pace. You're still probably going to get something like a 20 homer pace. I think that's more valuable.
Okay. So,
and there are reasons to believe that Adolis Garcia is playing over his head. His plate discipline is quite bad. He swings at a lot of pitches. Like, he swings about 55% of the time, which is pretty high, but not all that high. I believe he's got the 4th highest out of zone swing rate in baseball and the 7th highest, 7th lowest contact rate, I believe is what the numbers were when I was looking earlier today. It's really, really hard. Even with, like, he's got a 29% strikeout rate. I think that's going to catch up to him at some point.
Let's talk about Walker Buehler, who is having an interesting season, and we haven't really talked about him all that much. He pitched on Wednesday against the Cardinals, 6 innings, 7 hits, 3 runs, 2 walks to 8 strikeouts. He's got a 2.82 ERA that comes with a 3.50 xFIP and a career low 8.96 K per 9 for Walker Buehler. And we're going to pit him up against Zach Wheeler here, who is currently a top 12 starting pitcher in fantasy baseball. Chris, which one would you rather have?
I think it's Wheeler.
Whoa.
I'm looking at my rankings and I think Buehler is SP 16. I'm looking at that, and that's kind of the end of a 15. Sorry, I moved Jack Flaherty behind him after his injury. He's 15, Wheeler's 14, and I think that's kind of the end of like maybe a second or third tier at starting pitcher. And I feel like there's a pretty big drop off to him, from him to the Hyunjin Ryu, Joe Musgrove, Julio Urias is the next three that I've got. But I do think Wheeler is a little better of a pitcher right now than Walker Buehler. Walker Buehler's had some weird trends early on this season. He is he's getting hit quite hard. He had, I believe, 9 batted balls over 95 miles per hour today. It's against the Cardinals lineup that's good, but not exactly great. And for the season, I believe he had a 41% hard hit rate coming into the game. That's likely higher today. He is coming in today again. He had a 395 expected wOBA on contact. That is 40 points higher than his career high, 30 points higher than the league average. And he's not getting as many strikeouts as he has. His 25.3% strikeout rate is the lowest of his career. So I think you add it all up, and besides the ERA and the WHIP, which look exactly like what you'd expect from Walker Buehler, everything's kind of moving in the wrong direction for him. And, you know, he's lost a little bit of velocity on his fastball. He's added spin rate on his pitches. I think there's, you know, he's probably getting some tips from a teammate on that trick, because that's the same one Trevor Bauer did last year, and God bless him. But I don't think it has necessarily made Walker Buehler a better pitcher. That being said, he's incredibly talented, and it's entirely possible he comes out in his next start and averages 96.5 with his fastball and you know, erases some of those concerns. But I do think he's a lower end ace rather than the, you know, higher end ace you were hoping he would be.
Yeah, I think you talked me into this one. I'm going to move Zach Wheeler ahead of Walker Buehler. I think it's very close, and no one really talks about this because Walker Buehler is great. Look, there's no doubt about that, but he's not someone that gets a ton of swinging strikes. In Walker Buehler's career, 11.7% swinging strike rate. It's fine. It's like just above league average, and he gets the most out of that in his overall numbers. But yeah, Zach Wheeler this year, 13% swinging strike rate with a ground ball rate that's approaching 50%. He's not walking anybody. He's going deep into his starts. Obviously, he has to keep those things up. And, you know, we've never really seen Wheeler do that over the course of 30 plus starts in a full season. But yeah, the way he's pitching right now, let's do it. Let's take Zach Wheeler over Walker Buehler. This next one, Dansby Swanson or Gleyber Torres. Dansby Swanson went 1-for-4 with his 9th home run on Wednesday. His last 15 games, he's batting .310 with 4 home runs and 1 steal. Gleyber Torres also had 2 hits on Wednesday. He's got the batting average up to .266. OPS is still at .697. Over his last 15 games, Gleyber Torres is batting .327. Just not doing it with much power. So who would you rather have, Chris? Dansby Swanson or Gleyber Torres?
Yeah, Gleyber's having a weird season too. There are reasons to be optimistic, but mostly there are not reasons to be optimistic.
When did he turn into David Fletcher?
I mean, he's kind of... Like last year seemed like the outlier fluke for him, and now it's kind of looking like maybe the start of something resembling a new normal. He has 5 home runs over his last 89 games, stretching back to the end of last season. I think I would still rather have Torres. I think he's the more talented player. I think there's more upside with him than there is with Dansby Swanson, but it's a lot harder to say that with the last couple of weeks in mind, because Swanson was struggling just as badly before that.
Yeah, it is. It's very close. And I think in Roto, I might take Dansby Swanson. He's more likely to run, though Gleyber Torres does have 3 steals this year. Better lineup with the Braves. It's pretty close. I'll still take Gleyber Torres, but we're getting closer there. Dansby Swanson, a very welcome sight, the fact that he's coming around, because his first 2 months of the season were very slow. I guess it's 6 weeks now that he's come around a little bit. The next one I wanted to talk about, Tyler Mahle or Sean Manaea. Tyler Mahle on the season has a 3.42 ERA with a 1.16 WHIP, 10.4 K per nine. Great numbers for Mahle, and some people have actually emailed in. I saw an Apple Podcast review question about Tyler Mahle. Oddly enough, he only has 2 quality starts of his 11 starts. So he doesn't go all that deep into his starts. And Sean Manaea, I was trying to look up his final line, but it's not final. He's still pitching in the ninth inning. He is going for a shutout right now against the Seattle Mariners. So Sean Manaea has been a little bit inconsistent this year, but mostly good. The ERA right now at 3.39. In the ninth inning, he has 8 strikeouts in the start. Who would you rather have, Chris? Tyler Mahle or Sean Manaea?
I would rather have Mahle. I think there are limitations to both of their games, but all in all, I think Mally's pretty close in it's pretty close between the two of them in terms of the quality of contact they allow. They actually have both been pretty good as far as that goes this season, and historically over the course of their careers. But Mahle is more like a 28% strikeout rate guy going back to the start of last season, and Manaea is more like a 24% strikeout rate guy. So I'll go with the guy who gets more strikeouts there.
Yeah, I'll take Tyler Mahle as well. It's extremely close, especially coming off a phenomenal performance that Sean Manaea just put together here. But his whip, oddly enough for Manaea, was pretty high coming into this start. I could find out the final whip now after this one has been completed. It's down to 1.25, but he's allowing over a hit per inning, which is very surprising for Sean Manaea, considering, you know, the quality of contact that he does induce there. I like both of them. I think they're both top 50 starting pitchers. I think Mally's actually closer to top 40. But yeah, look, give us a little bit more length. That's what we'd like to see from Tyler Mahle there. Another Met that slowly coming around here. James McCann went 3-for-4 with a home run and 4 RBI on Wednesday. He is 57% rostered his last 15 games. 295 batting average with 3 home runs. Up against Mike Zunino, Chris, who has just been mashing all season long. I think he has 12 home runs in the season. I'll look that up for certain. But James McCann or Mike Zunino. McCann or Zunino.
Zunino is also still striking out at a Zunino in 39.8%. So I take James McCann fairly easily. We know what Zunino is, and at his best, he's a cheap source of power and basically nothing else. And that can make him a top 25 or top 20 catcher, but I'd rather have McCann.
The reason I ask is I think Mike Zunino, despite his strikeouts, he ranks very highly in points leagues this year. Yeah, he does. He is
12 homers and you know, 45 combined runs in RBI will do that at the catcher position. I would guess those rank pretty high, but like it, you're just kind of every week you're hoping he runs into a couple, and the weeks that he doesn't hit any home runs, he's got 12 non-home run hits this season. He had 7 in 28 games last year. He had 35 in 90 games in 2019. So he is about as all or nothing a hitter as you get in baseball.
All right. Yes, I will take James McCann as well. I think he's better than the player he has shown for most of this season, but you know that whole Mets lineup has been underperforming so far.
First place Mets though, somehow.
Yeah, no, they're in first place. Yeah, I got to stop dogging the Mets because they are performing even with as many injuries and underperformances they've had. So shout out to the New York Mets this season. One of the last ones that we have here for you, Chris. I mean, this is one for the ages.
It's a tough one.
John Gant or Gerrit Cole.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look at ERA and Gerrit Cole, he's having a very good season, but, you know,
actually, I think
178 ERA, that's a far cry from John Gant's 160 ERA. And the John Gant thing is going to stop happening at some point.
Is it, though?
Probably.
I love that
but it's real fun how frustrated it makes people and how completely, I don't want to say completely inexplicable because like he's doing something right. The guy's thrown, you know, 186 innings as a starter in the major leagues with a 3.34 ERA, and he's got 127 additional innings as a reliever with a 3.60 ERA. He's doing something right. I don't know what it is.
Gerrit Cole has a 33.5% K minus walk percentage. John Gant has a 2.2% K K-minus walk percentage. This is absolutely ridiculous, but you know what? We are officially the John Gant podcast. I don't know how it's happened, but it has happened. Obviously, I am completely being egregious, but continue to stream John Gant for as long as he continues with this charade.
So just to actually like make a somewhat cogent point, for his career, he has a 3.344 expected WOBA on contact. That's a measure of basically quality of contact allowed. Lee average over the course of his career is 3.63. This season, he's at 3.64. He's had 2.99, 3.19, 3.06 in various seasons. So he is really good at limiting hard contact. Not exactly sure why, not exactly sure how, but it does seem to be a legitimate skill for John Gant. And he's going to keep frustrating people, I think.
He has SPARP eligibility in points leagues. I'll just throw it out there. Just another one of these guys that has emerged. All right, now it's the last one, Chris. June 3rd is actually National Egg Day. So would you rather an omelet or an egg sandwich?
Egg sandwich, easily. I mean,
which kind?
The perfect one for me is a potato roll, scrambled eggs, American cheese, sausage. That to me, that's just like the perfect combination of all those things. I will say, if you're throwing an egg sandwich on a bagel, get out of here. You're a monster. And give me the omelet. Because the bagel, it's too hard to chew through the bagel without pushing everything out the back. Yeah. That's the problem.
Yep, 100%. Give me a Kaiser roll, you know, maybe some poppy seeds on top, bacon, egg, and cheese. I'll go with bacon. Chris will go with sausage, but 100%. We're taking egg sandwich over egg omelet. Before we hit the break, our Facebook group just had its best month ever with over 1,100 posts. We want to not only thank all of our members for making it such an engaging place, but also want to give a shout out to two of our new moderators, Kyle Belback and Cole Douglas Claiborne, for helping out. They've done a great job getting your posts approved in a timely fashion. You can join the fun at facebook.com/groups/fantasybaseballtoday. We're going to take a quick break, but when we return, we're going to talk about another Mets hitter that's slowly coming around. We'll do it next here, Fantasy Baseball Today.
Shopify's already taken the cash register online, helping millions sell billions around the world. But did you know that Shopify can do the same thing at your retail store? Give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify. That's right, Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere. Online, in-store, on social media, and beyond. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. With Shopify POS, you can accept credit cards, mobile payments, and every other major payment method, all with low fees and transparent pricing, starting on day one. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/MLB podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/MLB podcast to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/MLB podcast.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. And we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Chris, how would you rank these first baseman slash outfielders? They are kind of available. I think, you know, if you play in a 12-team points league, you might see these all three of these players available. Dom Smith went 3-for-4 with a walk on Wednesday. He has 7 hits over his last 4 games. He's 62% rostered. Pavin Smith with the Arizona Diamondbacks, 1-for-2 with 2 walks, 2 runs scored, quietly batting .290. He's got an .803 OPS, 53% rostered. Ryan Mountcastle, 2-for-4 with his 6th home run, his last 15 games. I was supposed to write in here, but I didn't, so I'll look it up. He's 52% rostered. Chris, Dom Smith, Pavin Smith, Ryan Mountcastle, how would you rank those three?
I kind of wish Pavin Smith was fast, because it feels like his profile would be so much more interesting. And obviously, you could say that about basically any slow player. He
looks like he should be fast, though. If you watch him play, he's pretty athletic.
Yeah, it kind of feels like he should be fast the way he plays, and he's not. I think I would take Dominic Smith over Pavin Smith. I think Mountcastle would probably be third, although I'm not necessarily sure my rankings reflect that, so I do probably need to give more respect to Pavin Smith.
Ryan Mountcastle's last 15 games, he is batting .288 with 3 home runs, 13 RBIs. So slowly coming around. He had a really good last year, 2020, with the Baltimore Orioles. He does have 20 strikeouts in those 15 games. The strikeouts have been a real, real tough issue for Ryan Mountcastle this year. But I think Dom Smith and Mountcastle in particular have not league winning upside. I think that's too much of a statement, but I think they can be like significant contributors the rest of the way. I don't feel that way about Pavin Smith. So I think I would go Smith, Mountcastle, and then Pavin Smith, but you know, Pavin Smith has been rock solid. So, Dom Smith, if he was dropped in your league, I think I would go out there and pick him back up. Some interesting starting pitcher performances from Wednesday. Nick Pivetta at the Houston Astros, 6 innings, 3 hits, 2 runs, 2 walks, and 9 strikeouts. The ERA is down to 3.77. The whip is 1.22. The strikeouts have been great this year, Chris, for Pivetta. 10.3 K per 9, but that also comes with a 4.2 walks per 9. So where are you at on Nick Pivetta?
Feeling pretty vindicated about my pre-2018 Nick Pivetta is better than Luis Castillo takes, I'll tell you that much.
You know, I think it was before that season where people were basically deciding between drafting Pivetta or Shane Bieber. Like those were the two like.
Oh, they were like the same guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Spider-Man. It was pre-2019 maybe. And it was like high strikeouts, good control, gets hit really hard. And they, you know, kind of went in opposite directions there. I think Pivetta can be a league average pitcher with a decent amount of strikeouts moving forward, but I don't expect much more than that.
Yep. I think that's fair to say. He also has SPARP eligibility. I would rather have that Pivetta over John Gant if I was given that option. Then Nelson Lamet. This one, also interesting, Chris, at the Cubs, 4 innings, 1 run, 1 walk, 6 strikeouts, 12 swinging strikes on a season-high 72 pitches. Velocity did remain down from last year, but he's slowly building up now. I wouldn't be surprised if, all right, next time we're pushing 80, maybe we get to 5 innings for Denelson Lamet. The thing is, people have kept the faith. He is still 84% rostered, so you're not going to find him on waiver wires. But you might still be able to buy low on Denelson Lamet if you think he comes anywhere close to the pitcher he was last year.
Yeah, it would have to be really, really low. It would have to be probably not for a Nick Pivetta type, but, you know, a low, like if I could swap, I don't even know if I would do Kikuchi.
Would you trade Alek Manoah for Denelson Lamet?
I think I'd rather have Manoah.
Would you trade?
I would trade Alzolay for Lamet.
I mean, you want to talk about a Spider-Man meme? It's those two right there.
I would trade Manaea for him.
No.
Yeah.
Sean Manaea for Denelson Lamet?
I think I would do that. Yeah.
I think you're wrong.
That's fine. I'm wrong about lots of things. I'm pretty dumb.
That means where do you have Sean Manaea in your rankings then?
Pretty low.
You're gonna. Oh, all right. Well. I'm not sure. I think I might be the.
He's 53.
So you're going to move Denelson Lamet inside your top 60 starting pitchers?
Nah. Fine. You talked me into it.
Shane McClanahan, Chris, was at the Yankees on Wednesday, and he did not have a good start. He allowed 4 runs over 3 1/3. He had 17 swinging strikes on 79 pitches. The 79 pitches were the second most that he threw in a start all season, so I think that was pretty interesting for McClanahan. I'm going to continue to say this every time out. I don't know that anyone that you're going to be able to acquire him on the cheap in a keeper or dynasty league, but I think you should, because I think Shane McClanahan is really good. And his swinging strike rate, if he qualified, would be top 5 among starting pitchers. So is this enough, Chris, just in a redraft league to drop McClanahan, or would you continue to hold?
There are so many pitchers right now. Like, I think I'd rather have Lamet than him, but they're similar.
How about Tarek Skubal?
I'd rather have Skubal than him. But the thing with McClanahan is, I'm not sure if the Rays are right that he can't throw deep into games. Like they seem pretty insistent, and maybe it's just like a physical thing. Like maybe they just don't believe he can throw 100 pitches. But I don't see any reason to think his arsenal can't work a third time through the order. I mean, he's throwing four pitches now. He's got, you know, this amazing slider and this amazing fastball as well, but he's throwing a curveball 7% of the time and a changeup 7% of the time. And it's a little higher in some starts than others. I think there is room for him. Like, it was 22% on the changeup today. I think there's a chance he gets. I think there's a chance he could do more than the Rays might let him. And that's my concern.
I mean, you can insert any Tampa Bay Rays starting pitcher name at the beginning of that sentence, right? I mean, we saw it with Blake Snell in the postseason, right? And for the past couple of years. And there's usually a method behind the madness with the Tampa Bay Rays. I agree with you. I think the stuff is absolutely electric. I think in redraft leagues, if there is a starting pitcher that you are dying to add, you probably can drop McClanahan just because I don't think he's going to go deep enough to qualify for wins all that often. And in a points league, you obviously need that volume, though he does have SPARP eligibility. But again, in Keeper Dynasty, if you can acquire him anywhere on the cheap, it's a no-brainer for me. Antonio Senzatella, Chris, is there anything here? He was up against the Rangers, 7 2/3, 3 runs. Only one of those were earned, 3 strikeouts. Pretty good performance here. Anything, Antonio Senzatella?
Yeah, the Rangers got 7 hits. That's a pretty good game for them. No, he does this occasionally. And I don't think there's any reason to think Antonio Senzatella is anything more than just a guy.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Some leftovers from Wednesday. Anthony Rizzo went 3-for-4 with a double and 2 RBI, his second game back after dealing with a back injury. Ketel Marte, 1-for-4 with his 4th home run. Clint Frazier, 1-for-2 with a walk and 2 RBI. He's slowly coming around, Chris. Clint Frazier, yesterday we spoke about him. He's 40% rostered on CBS. Would you be looking to add him in 5 outfielder leagues? He can get hot.
5 outfielder leagues, sure. I think that's about it. Frankly, I don't think he's all that good, is my issue. But in a 5 outfielder league, you know, he could hit 20 homers and steal, you know, 6 bases the rest of the season. You know, that wouldn't shock me.
Clint Frazier's last 15 games, he's batting .271 with 2 homers and 2 steals. So kind of interesting. Randall Grichuk had a double dong. He is now batting .289 with 11 home runs. Juan Soto, the guy just loves the month of June. This is what he was waiting for. 2 games in June, now has 2 home runs. Since getting 4 hits back on May 19th, Yuli Gurriel is just 4-for-32. His average has dropped from .338 to .301. Gio Urshela went 2-for-4 with his 6th home run of the season on Wednesday. He is batting .261. Jazz Chisholm, we already told you about. He went 1-for-4 with his 6th home run of the season. The call to the pen, some bullpen updates. Your Miami Marlins, Chris. They got to Alek Manoah, but then unfortunately, Yimi Garcia had a meltdown in the 9th inning. He allowed 3 hits and 3 runs. He took the blown save and the loss. For the Baltimore Orioles, Paul Fry recorded the final 5 outs of that game. He allowed an inherited runner to score on a sac fly to make the game 6-3. That's why he did not qualify for the save. And we spoke a lot about Cole Sulcer yesterday, Chris, and I think it's between those two. I think it's Paul Fry versus Cole Sulcer, and people are, why are you talking about the Baltimore Orioles bullpen? Look, man, you play in 12-team roto category leagues or deeper? Anybody who can sniff a save is worth rostering at this point. So I think they're going to play at the matchups, but my Twitter mentions are very confident in Paul Fry.
I'm never particularly confident in lefties being named full-time closers.
I think they probably just play matchups. You know, if there's lefties coming up in the 9th, they'll go with Fry. If there's righties, it's Sulcer.
Yeah, that seems to make the most sense to me.
For the Rockies, Daniel Bard got his 6th save, and he's actually been pretty good recently. The Astros, Ryan Pressly got his 8th. The Yankees, Aroldis Chapman, his 12th. The Mets, Edwin Diaz got his 10th save. And the Nationals, Brad Hand got his 9th save of the season. To stream or not to stream for Thursday, Jake Odorizzi versus the Red Sox. John Gray versus the Rangers at home, where he's very good. Tyler Anderson versus the Marlins. Chris Bubich versus the Twins. Griffin Canning versus the Mariners and Justice Sheffield at the Angels.
John Gray, Tyler Anderson, and Griffin Canning.
On Friday, Kwanghyun Kim versus the Reds. Spencer Turnbull at the White Sox. Matt Shoemaker at the Royals. Cody Poteet at the Pirates. Anybody else here? Keegan Aiken for the Orioles is going up against Cleveland. I'm kind of doing this on the fly right now, so I don't. Those are the only ones that I see. Oh, Jake Arrieta at the Giants. I'll throw him in there. It's a very, very bad group.
I might actually go Josh Fleming with the...
I like that. I could get behind that.
The Rangers?
Where do you look for your probables, Chris?
I was looking at ESPN.com.
Okay, because I have MLB, but, yeah. and there's a bunch of TBDs on here.
Yeah, and yeah, there's a bunch of TBDs here as well. Cody Poteet has been pretty interesting.
I agree.
I frankly can't say I know all that much about him, but the early results have been pretty promising. Like, he doesn't throw super hard. He's got about average velocity, but he gets a ton of spin on his pitches, and that's led to pretty good results so far. So, him. Cody Poteet.
Fleming. I'm with you on Fleming. Poteet. And if you want a third one, I don't really like any of these, but I'll say Spencer Turnbull at the White Sox. But just remember, I don't really like it. Some emails. This one's from Scott Wolf. My offense has been decimated by injuries. Bryce Harper, Corey Seager, Luke Voigt, Kevin Biggio, Mike Moustakas, and I was offered Bo Bichette and Teoscar Hernandez for my Shane Bieber. Is that enough to give up my ace? For more context, I'd still be looking at John Means. I assume this is Ian Anderson, Zach Greinke, Aaron Civale, Robbie Ray, Framber Valdez, and Dylan Bundy in my rotation. I think if this is a Roto or Categories League, that is a fine return for Shane Bieber. I don't have an issue with it. I do think it kind of leaves your pitching staff a little vulnerable without Shane Bieber here, because then you have a bunch of SP2s, SP3s. You don't have another SP1 outside of Bieber.
And like, I could see things going sideways for Civale, Ray. They already have for Bundy. Honestly, even John Means, there are some red flags in his profile. So it is definitely, it's dealing from a relative strength, but I don't know if it's such a strength that I would want to do that. I would rather be looking to trade. I think I would rather try to trade Means and see what I can get for him.
I think that's a good call. Maybe just counter Means for Teoscar Hernandez. I mean, is that enough? Probably not.
I would try Bichette for Teoscar for Means.
Yeah, try
see
it.
If I could do that.
Try it, yeah. Throw in a hitter. See if Means and a hitter gets it done for Bo Bichette. But we would not take Bichette and Teoscar for Shane Bieber.
Yeah, it's close in Roto, but within the context of your team, I don't think you have quite enough pitching that I feel good about.
Grade these trades from Colin. CJ Krohn and Emmanuel Clase for Paul Goldschmidt. Does not say what format.
I like the Goldschmidt side quite a bit more, so I would say it's a B for that side.
Trade number two. Hector Neris, Sandy Alcantara, and Jesse Winker for Mookie Betts, Jock Peterson, and Keenan Middleton.
I like the Neris, Winker, Alcantara side more, so a B for that one.
Yeah. If you gave up Neris, I think it's probably a C-. You are getting the best player in the deal with Mookie Betts.
But I think you're getting the next three best players.
Yeah, you're giving up the next three best players. Yeah, I would agree with that. C-. This one's from Alfredo. He has a few questions here. First question, my pitching staff is strong, but maybe I can upgrade. Both Kenton Maeda and Luis Castillo are on waivers. Should I pick up either? Who do I drop, Robbie Ray or Alex Wood? Would you drop Robbie Ray or Alex Wood for Castillo or Maeda, Chris? Oh, that's so tough because Wood is...
I would rather have Maeda and Castillo than Ray and Wood rest of season, but I'm not sure I would want to drop them. I would hope you have a worse player that you could drop.
If these are your worst pitchers, you're saying you would do it?
Yeah, I think you could drop Castillo first.
No. Castillo's on waivers. So,
oh, sorry. Yeah.
I have Robbie Ray ranked ahead of Kenta Maeda, so I would not make that swap. It's tough the way that he's pitching, but I think I would drop Alex Wood for Luis Castillo.
I think I would too.
The next one is I had Jake McGee and I cut him for Tyler Rogers. Should I cut Tyler Rogers now for Jordan Romano? Let's assume that this person needs saves, Chris.
See, I think this is the same email, and I would rather, if it came down to it, I'd rather cut one of the closers for one of those starters and see if I can catch lightning in a bottle with Castillo. And if not, you know, continue to try to stream closers. If this is the same email, that's what I would try to do. If not, I think cutting Rogers for Romano is fine. I don't feel strongly about it one way or the other.
Yeah, I would make that swap. I would drop Rogers for Jordan Romano. All right, we made it. The end of the podcast. The burning question. What does Frank have on his mind that he needs to ask Chris about? Chris, why are you such a hater, dude? Why are you such a hater on my New York Knicks? Just think about this. You work with two hosts. Fantasy Football Today, Adam Azer. Fantasy Baseball Today, myself, Frank Stanfield. Mm-hmm. We are both diehard Knicks fans. And you just... Knicks lose in the playoffs, and Chris is just there to stick the knife in and turn it, and then turn it again, and pull it out.
I assume you're referring to when I pointed out that tickets for Nets games will be more expensive than tickets for Knicks games in the second round of the playoffs.
Ha ha ha! Yeah,
I'm just simply pointing out that was a big topic of discussion among New York basketball fans over the last couple of weeks, and it seems as if things have turned in the Nets' favor in that regard.
They were always in the Nets' favor, Chris. Come on. Nobody thought the Knicks were winning the NBA championship. Why are you such a hater? Just answer the question. Why are you such a hater?
One, I'm not a hater.
You're a hater.
Two, I still hold, I don't really feel emotions about sports anymore, but I do still feel lingering resentment over the Knicks Heat series in the 90s. Larry Johnson was probably my first sports villain. And it's so much fun to troll you guys.
Hate.
Because there is just like, there is no fan base that is more irrationally confident.
Hate.
Than Knicks fans who have had two good seasons in the last 20 years. And every time there's one rookie who scores like 9 points in a quarter, they're like, this guy, the steal of the draft. Like, oh God, what was that guy? Who was that guy?
Like, you're talking,
the guy went, you're the talking guy went smack, to Harvard or whatever. Now, you're talking Stanford.
Smack guy went about Stanford. The team. Talking Andrew smack Field. About the team. You don't even know anything about them, Chris.
What was the guy last year?
Who?
There was some guy last year that they were like, oh, this guy's awesome. He stinks. I can't remember his
name. They drafted this year Obi Toppin and Emmanuel Quickly. I don't know if you're referring to either of those guys.
But. No, it was a guy the year before. And everyone was like, oh, this guy's awesome.
All right. You're a troll. Whatever, Chris. It's fine. You know,
it was RJ Barrett.
I think you should be. He went to Duke. What?
No, it was Lonzo Trier.
Yeah, he stinks. Be more supportive of your co-host. That's what I would. That's the lesson. That's the moral of this story. Be more supportive.
Trolling's a lot more fun.
It's not nice, man. It's that you hurt my feelings. You know, I scrolled through your Twitter before we start. I like to do that to kind of get a feel of what I do that with Scott as well, to get a feel of what you guys are talking about that day. And maybe I could spark some conversation within the podcast. And I saw that and I'm just like, why are you the way that you are? Michael Scott give. All right, so that was my burning question. Stop being a hater, Chris. We're going to wrap there. For Chris, I'm Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be back again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.